Ananda Brindavan Champu, Chapter 15, Lifting Govardhan Hill. Looking like the full moon surrounded by a galaxy of stars, Krishna, the playful son of Rajaraja Nanda, enjoyed blissful pastimes with his intimate associates. These joyous pastimes perfectly befit the enchanting atmosphere of Vrindavan. In the daytime, Krishna tended the cows and sported with his boyfriends. Mother Earth felt honored by the touch of Krishna's lotus feet. The cowherd boys felt inconceivable bliss within their minds as they frolicked with Krishna. During their fun-filled days, Krishna often killed some envious demon who acted like poison to saintly persons. One day, Nanda Maharaj, the abode of kindness, simplicity, and joy, and other senior men of Vrindavan made preparations to worship the demigod Indra. They collected many articles and made elaborate arrangements for a joyous festival. Noticing this, Krishna said to his father, "O honored one, what is the name of the ceremony you are organizing? Which demigod are you trying to please? Who is the guru instructing you in this yajna with his infallible words? What injunctions and system of worship are you following? Why are people running around mechanically in all directions? I do not understand the meaning of it. Of course, since I am only a boy, you may not consider me to be qualified to comprehend your explanation. But if you think I am eligible, then tell me all the details of this yajna from beginning to end. If, however, you think it is too confidential, then still you should tell, because one should not keep secrets from well-wishers. But such details should never be revealed to one's enemies." After speaking so maturely, Krishna sat next to Rajaraja Nanda on a cloth asana. Nanda Baba lovingly picked up his son, who was like a spotless moon moving on the earth, and placed him on his lap. Hearing the sweet questions of his son, Nanda affectionately smiled, revealing his attractive white teeth. The soft glow of his face resembled nectar drops of milk. This nectar appeared to be washing and nourishing Nanda's beard, which was mixed with white and black hair. Beaming in a jolly mood, Rajaraja Nanda tactfully described the nature of the sacrifice. Nanda Maharaj said, "My dear son, in our family line, we have been observing this Indra Yajna for a long time. We experience prosperity and freedom from disturbances due to its proper performance. Our only wealth is the cows that live on grass, which needs rain to grow. Rain comes from the clouds that are controlled by the demigod Indra. For all these reasons, therefore, I am making a grand festival to please Indra. Every year at this time, we carefully observe this sacrifice. Being pleased with our yajna, Indra sends abundant rainfall. The other demigods gladly accept our oblations of ghee and show their gratitude by preserving what we have and providing what we need. The scriptures say that human beings who honor this tradition become glorious and attain the heavenly planets in their next lives. Any man can attain peace of mind by the blessings of those demigods. Those who neglect to worship the demigods, however, cannot get any relief from their problems." After hearing these bitter words, Krishna smiled mildly to hide his feelings and then refuted Nanda's presentation. Krishna's eloquent delivery amazed and pleased the Brajavasis. Indeed, Krishna mesmerized the entire audience with his words. Krishna said, "In this regard, your actions are not justified. The force of karma causes the birth, maintenance, and destruction of all living entities. It is not the demigods, but it is a person's work that determines his destiny. A saintly person, therefore, need not worship any demigod. One may beg so many desirable things from the demigods, but the demigods cannot give one more than what he is destined by his own pious and impious acts. Only those who cannot control their senses propound that demigods can award more than what one has worked to attain. You can say that living entities are inspired to act by the supersoul, but this is also false, because every individual is under the control of his own conditioned nature. In reality, it is the acquired desires and personal nature of a living entity that causes him to act. Where is the question of the supersoul being the supreme controller? Even the Lord himself does not directly perform the activities of creation, maintenance, and destruction. All these actions are conducted by the three modes of material nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. It is not a fact that wherever it rains, the cause is worshipping and pleasing Indra, who in turn sends the rain clouds. There is constant rain during the monsoon season, but you cannot say that Indra sends it. Indeed, the monsoon rains bring mental distress and make people weak and thin. So that rain is not the mercy of someone who is pleased. Do the seas and mountains worship Indra? Of course not, but still they are full of water. Why does Indra give them so much water? Impelled by the material mode of passion, the clouds pour rain everywhere, and this rain sustains all creatures. Therefore, nothing will happen if you do not worship Indra. The Brahmana maintains his life by studying and teaching the Vedas, the Kshatriya by protecting the earth and political activity, the Vaishya by trade and agriculture, and the Shudra by serving the other classes. The occupational duties of the Vaishya are conceived of in four divisions: farming, commerce, cow protection, and money lending. Of these, our duty is cow protection. Neither in the past nor in the present has there been any certainty about having a successful grain harvest in our village. Therefore, this yajna means nothing to us. It is our nature to dwell in the forest and wander in the woods and on the hills. Since we never stay in one place, why should we perform the Indra Yajna, which is not based on scriptural injunctions? O Father, you are peaceful and respected by everyone. You should have faith in my words, for they will remove all danger. Now just expertly worship Govardhan Hill with all the ingredients collected for the Indra Yajna. This great mountain is not only named Govardhan, but it has the ability to increase, Vardhana, the health and satisfaction of our cows. Go. Collect pots full of milk and make first-class milk sweets like sweet rice. Cook many tasty foods and fancy cakes. Bring leaf bowls full of ghee, honey, and nectar drinks. Prepare an ocean of yogurt, buttermilk, and fresh butter. Build a mountain of rock candy and cover all directions with an abundance of Sikharini Rasala. Send messengers to invite the Brahmanas. Feed them sumptuously until they laugh and their faces beam with the brilliant garlands of their blissful smiles. At that moment, the Brahmanas will consider that the heavenly storehouses of nectar are totally insignificant. Call the priests to conduct the fire sacrifice and distribute cows and charity to the Brahmanas. Those among you who are simple-hearted should just try to feed the Brahmanas. You should please everyone by making an anakut, hill of food, with thick dals, varieties of aromatic vegetables, and very palatable sweet cakes surrounded by pools of unlimited sweet rice. Then worship Giri Govardhan with the proper articles such as padya. After feeding the Brahmanas, you should give food to everyone else, including such fallen souls as dogs and dog eaters. Saturate the directions with the sweet music of berries, resonant conches, tumultuous kettle drums, and various other instruments. The witty, well-versed Brahmanas will start the yajna with perfectly pronounced Mangalacharna mantras. The entire horizon will be surcharged with all these auspicious sounds. According to Shastric injunction, you should circumambulate Giriraj to conclude the worship. Decorated with priceless jingling ornaments that delight the ears, the men should dress so luxuriously that even the demigods would be astonished. The housewives, with their sweet, gentle smiles, should also assemble. Invite the male and female artists to dance and sing along with flutes, vinas, and mridangas. Bring the bullock carts in a procession led by scholarly brahmanas who are truly the personified jewels of all auspiciousness. You, who have the audacity to challenge even Lord Indra, who lives for millenniums, should happily circumambulate Govardhan Hill along with your cows, bulls, and calves. Do not think, how can we have faith that Giriraj will satisfy our desires? Soon Giriraj will fulfill all your desires and become famous as a second Mahendra. He will reward you handsomely and make all your endeavors fruitful. What more can I say? O Father, if you want to, you can follow my advice and achieve an auspicious result. After hearing Krishna's speech, Nanda Maharaj and the leading men of Vrindavan accepted his proposal. They agreed that this must be done to satisfy their desires. Acting as the Acharya of the Yajna, Krishna directed the Brajabasis to worship Giriraj with all the paraphernalia collected for Indra's worship. This, of course, made Indra extremely angry. Nothing else could be heard in Vrindavan except the auspicious vibrations of instrumental music. Vedic hymns resounded through the sky. The Brajabasis felt blissful, and all the living entities entered a jolly mood from the worship of Govardhan. Hearing the melodious voices of the ladies, the cuckoos anxiously tried to learn singing from them. Ears attained their purpose by perceiving those auspicious sounds. The cows were adorned with gold-plated horns, colorful silk cloths on their backs, pearl necklaces, and tinkling bells hanging from their necks. Seeing their mothers so richly ornamented, the calves jumped excitedly. Nanda Maharaj brought the necessary articles from his house to worship Govardhan Hill. He initiated the puja by respectfully offering paja water to wash Giriraj's feet. In an ebullient mood, he made the Anakuta Hill complete with powerful peaks that delighted all in attendance. The peak arising out of the middle of the hill looked like a crown made of white camphor. The multicolored cakes stuck on the sides of the Anakut Hill looked like stones and boulders. At the base of the hill, there were clay pots full of milk, yogurt, and sweet rice. There were also colorful sabjis, lakes of dal, and very fragrant soups. Due to its covering of ghee, the Anakut Mountain looked like golden Mount Kailash shimmering under a cover of rain. Different kinds of fruits and flowers decorated its edges. When Nanda Maharaj saw the opulence of Anakut spreading its sweet aroma of cloves, camphor, and cardamom in all directions, he felt that this was fitting honor to Sri Giriraj, the king of all mountains. Sri Hari smiled happily upon seeing the amazing Anakut rivaling the peak of Mount Sumeru. Suddenly, the playful, fun-loving, indomitable Krishna assumed a huge, unprecedented form and stood on top of Govardhan Hill. He did this to anger Indra and instill faith in the coward men. Observing this powerful form glowing like a thousand suns, Krishna, who remained among the coward men in his original human-like form, cast a gentle glance upon everyone and said, "Oh, look, look." By using all the paraphernalia to exclusively worship Govardhan Hill with pure love, you have received his favor. Govardhan, the best of all mountains, has now manifested before you as a brilliantly effulgent person. Please look closely. The huge mouth of this expanded form of Giriraj resembles a deep cave. Though his mouth is massive, his face looks as beautiful as the full moon. Usually trees serve as his arms, but now he has two beautiful arms adorned with attractive jeweled armlets. Usually hard rocks cover his body, but now he has assumed a tender sweet form. Look how that beautiful body walks over the other non-moving form. Moreover, this non-moving form is sitting like a seat made of costly emeralds, but it appears like the huge chest of the moving one. Glittering like a row of rubies, his teeth look like the crown of the non-moving form. The saffron hue of the minerals on the non-moving form gives an attractive hue to the lips of the moving one. In comparison, these two forms of Govardhan manifest the same elegance. Govardhan is reciprocating with your overflowing love and devotion. He is acting like a hungry person, extending his arms bedecked with jeweled bangles. Look, just see how this hill has appeared in person to fulfill your desires. Now offer respects to him. Both Krishna and the people of Vrindavan bow down to this personified form of Govardhan Hill. In effect, Krishna actually offered obeisances to himself. When the coward men, their wives, and the leading men of Vrindavan saw that form shining like the sun, they raised their folded hands above their heads and said, "Namo, Namo, Namo." Being overwhelmed in affection, they danced around ecstatically. By joyfully worshipping Govardhan Hill, the Brajavasis realized that Govardhan is a person. Music from the temples wherein different demigods were being worshipped resounded in all directions. From all sides, intoxicated dancers performed blissfully. The heavenly Kanaras joined in with euphoric dancing, relishing the music and singing. The Brajavasis forgot themselves in that joyous Govardhan festival. Govardhan caused the entire atmosphere to abound in happiness. Govardhan Hill affectionately accepted the faithful worship of Nanda Maharaj by manifesting a personal form. Anyone who simply hears and chants about the glories of Giri Govardhan, which are inconceivable to ordinary people, will be delivered from all calamities. Brajaraja Nanda, the father of the subduer of demons, concluded the propitious worship of Giriraj by sumptuously feeding the brahmanas and everyone else down to the dogs. He handsomely rewarded the singers and dancers. Everyone attending the festival received precious gems and divinely opulent garments. Their hearts full of joy, the Brajavasis talked excitedly among themselves as they did parikrama of Govardhan Hill. Skilled musicians led the way, playing the finest instrumental music. The languid, muffled tones of berries, dakas, and kettle drums softened the atmosphere with their pleasing vibrations. With their bodies decorated with designs drawn in kumkum, the coward boys followed behind the musicians. Wielding sticks, they fearlessly drove the multicolored cows ornamented with gold and jewels. A second group of talented musicians came along playing flutes and veenas. Next came singers with sweet, gentle voices and ecstatic dancers moving in rows one behind the other. Then the gopis, their faces glowing with happiness, came riding on bullock carts that rivaled the golden chariots of the gods. They sang loudly about their intimate pastimes with Krishna. Hari, who removes all obstacles, laughed and joked with his coward boyfriends as he circumambulated Govardhan Hill. Eternally bound to him in faith, Krishna's friends remained fearless and free from all anxieties. Wearing a sweet-smelling flower garland across his broad chest, Nanda Maharaj walked just behind the boys. He was smiling in great satisfaction and accompanied by the leading men of Vrindavan. In accordance with scriptural injunctions, they gave charity to brahmanas at different places while going around Giriraj. It is impossible to find a suitable container to hold the unlimited bliss that the Brajavasis felt during their parikrama of Giriraj. Even though tiny in size, the soul can enjoy immeasurable happiness. As a result, their souls drowned in inconceivable joy. The continuous music of the dakas and kettle drums, which are famous on heaven and earth, increased the bliss of the parikrama. Soon they arrived on the banks of the Jamuna, which previously flowed near Govardhan. Being the glorious day of Bhratri Dvitiya Tithi, which is very dear to both Yamuna and her brother Yamaraj, they decided to take an auspicious bath. Bratri Dvitiya Tithi is the day when sisters pray for the prosperity of their brothers. Sunanda, the intelligent, well-behaved daughter of Upananda, invited her cousin brother, Damodar, Krishna, who is always jubilant and victorious, to celebrate the festival. Damodar, who delights all moving and non-moving creatures, gladly accepted the sincere request of Sunanda. His heart overflowed with loving feelings for that dear sister. She affectionately served many types of delicious drinks and tasty cakes to Krishna and his friends. Haladar and all the boys enjoyed the excellent food, while Batu, the skillful jester, entertained the enchanter of the world with his funny jokes and antics. Batu quipped, "Alas! Alas! Our dear friend, Killer of the Aga Demon! Why didn't the foolish creator make every titi as Bratri Dvitiya Tithi? Oh, brother whose chest shines with the mark of Srivatsa, we count the year in terms of days. So how come you do not have many sisters like Sunanda, who, acting as the embodiments of kindness, will fill us up like this every day of the year? If this had happened, it would have been a great source of pleasure for us. Yesterday's exciting Govardhan festival has passed. Though heaps of food and drink were offered, and although I am a voracious eater, still I did not enjoy as much as I have today. On Bratri Dvitiya, Krishna, who steals everyone's heart with his charming character, enjoyed the simple joking words of Batu as he joyfully ate. Then in mutual affection, Damodar and Sunanda exchanged so much valuable cloth, jewels, and golden ornaments that it astonished the people on earth. Thus, the Bratri Dvitiya celebration ended. Meanwhile, the demigod Indra developed a headache due to being ignored and forgotten by the Brajavasis. We will now describe how we try to get relief and revenge by employing excessive rains. While sitting among the demigods, Indra felt sad and distressed, seeing that his sacrifice had been cancelled. Burning with rage, Indra said, "Just see how surprising it is. The intelligence of these coward men is just like the animals they tend. They stop my puja just by hearing a few words from a mere child. Even though many goddesses of learning praise me, those offensive coward men did not think twice about giving up my worship. Have they been overtaken by false pride? Oh, virtuous coward men, now you act deviously without any fear of anyone. Well, I will see how long it lasts. This foolish, arrogant, and talkative child has offended me. Even though you claim he satisfies your desires and gives you long, prosperous lives, we will soon see if he is really your well-wisher." Overcome by revenge and frustration, Indra considered for a moment how to retaliate against the Brajavasis. Angry Indra then released the powerful clouds of universal destruction known as Sambartaka. Coming before their master, the clouds submitted, "We are your servants and always ready to execute your order." To encourage his servants, Indra glanced at them with affection and appreciation as he addressed them. "Hong Ho, oh my playful speedy clouds who are famous throughout the world for distributing profuse rain. Your pride and your power fills me with strength. Now make me successful by carrying out my orders. You have the unadulterated mood of destroying the whole creation within you. But this assignment involves only one small region. Go shake the earth with your thunder and destroy the village of Vrindavan with a deluge." Being released from the task of devastating the universe at a particular time, Samvartaka and other servants of Indra proudly stepped forward to accomplish their mission. First, a vast bank of clouds appearing like a huge patch of moss in the sky blocked out the sun and covered Vrindavan in total darkness. Extending from Asatala to Swargaloka, the cloud covering looked like the smoky breath exhaled by the Naga snakes. Released from their bonds, a few ominous clouds in the sportive mood of breaking the Kedara mountain quickly spread across the sky. These dense dark clouds appeared as massive as the celestial elephants guarding the quarters of the globe. Another group of dangerous clouds circled overhead. The clouds, like Mount Mainaka, the sun of the Himalayas, continually expanded and flew freely in the sky without any fear of being cut by Indra's millions of thunderbolts. One fantastically large cloud bank appeared like a second Loka Loka mountain range. The hard peaks of those clouds continued to grow higher and higher while simultaneously expanding in all directions. When the clouds collected, they covered all the planetary systems in darkness. Even the sharpest axe could not cut through the dense network of clouds that assembled over Vrindavan. The three worlds appeared to be born out of the darkness created by that ever-expanding cloud bank. The covering of the universe turned as black as the soot smeared on the bottom of a pot. However, the universal disturbances and the attack of the devastating Samvartaka clouds had practically no effect on Vrindavan, which continually bathes in the moonlight emanating from Krishna's jewel-like toenails. After earth, water, fire, air, and so on, there is a tenth element known as Andha Tamasa, blinding darkness. Everything animate and inert in the ten directions appears stupefied by this element. It seemed that no one in the world could see anything. Water dripped from the dome-like covering of the universe. The water drops moved so fast that they formed a continuous stream of water speeding through the universe like a raging river breaking over its dam. Such a thing will never happen again. That torrential downpour seemed like the long hanging branches of the banyan tree of the sky. The cows sheltered their calves under the blankets of loose skin on their necks. In fear of the slashing rainwater, the cows kept their eyes almost closed and their tails hanging straight down. As they shivered uncontrollably from the violent rains, the skin on their backs swelled up. While standing in this painful condition, they looked toward Krishna for shelter. When the rain hit the horns of the bulls, it bounced off and landed on their thick, fatty humps. Breaking into small, pearl-like drops, it then rolled down their broad, muscular backs. Alas, alas! The fierce rainfall angered and tormented the bulls. Observing the torrents of rain, which fell in columns as thick as the trunks of full-grown banana trees, the coward men of Vrindavan thought that the devastation had suddenly arrived. Terrified and weakened, they approached Krishna, who makes everyone happy. Full of pain and agony, they said, "O Krishna, you always save us and give us happiness. Now we are in great danger. Since you are the Lord of Kukul, you should immediately protect us. Look, look, the flashing lightning bolt appears like the forked tongue of an angry snake. The pounding hailstones are pulverizing the life out of the trees. The lightning bolts entering the water seem like the brilliant fire emitted by mythical hydras. The clouds roar ferociously as they release torrents of rain as thick as massive columns. The vast sheets of water are increasing in volume like the ocean of devastation. The earth is quickly submerging in the flood and we cannot distinguish the high ground from the low. Just look around and see for yourself. The Surabhi cows use their own bodies to protect their calves from the pelting hailstones. With their tear-filled eyes, they are speaking to you. O Krishna, once you saved us from the devastating forest fire, so please save us from this terrible rainfall. Look at the condition of the bulls. Upon hitting their humps, the heavy hailstones are being ground into pieces and scattering on the ground like pearls. Their eyes redden in rage, The bulls raise their heads to look angrily at the clouds. Their faces and bodies are completely drenched in water. Oh, how much they are suffering! This devastation seems like the personification of a big anartha which we cannot remove. Only you can deliver us. Therefore, we surrender unto you. We are your loving kinsmen, so please save us. After hearing their anxious pleas and seeing the distress of his cows, Krishna, whose blossoming lotus eyes are beautiful to behold, considered, "This must be the work of angry Indra." In a compassionate voice, sweeter than honey, Krishna consoled his family and friends. "Do not be afraid. Actually, this trouble is as significant as a hunger pain is to one who has just consumed a sumptuous feast. Anyone practicing devotional service can easily remove all anarthas. The Kinnaras and the demigods glorify this fact. For your benefit, I will now enact a special pastime to destroy Indra's mountain of pride." As the relisher of nectarian rasas, Krishna has a beautiful body which is as sweet as the honey in a flower. Without even tightening his cloth, he showed complete indifference to the mighty wrath of the foolish Indra. Instantly, Krishna picked up Govardhan Hill with one hand and held it aloft with no more effort than a child takes to hold a mushroom or an elephant uses to lift a clump of grass. Many loud sounds echoed in all directions when the mountain rose in the air. The echoes sounded like a bunch of rowdy children yelling within its many caves. The lifting of Govardhan Hill produced an angry loud noise that crushed the pride of the elephants guarding the eight directions. That furious sound roamed about and around within the covering of the universe. The sound had enough intelligence to win a wager on whether it could break the long meditation of Brahma on Brahmaloka. That sound dared to interrupt the uproarious Madhvika wine-drinking festival of the old ladies on Patalaloka. The flowers falling from the trees appeared to be the form of Giriraj's ecstatic laughter due to being touched by Krishna's lotus hand. Those falling flowers seemed to be Giriraja celebrating the destruction of Indra's fame. Growing higher and higher, the sharp peaks of Giriraj cut the ominous cloud covered to pieces. The row of trees along the peaks of Giriraj challenged the trees in Indra's celestial forest. The lions living on top of Govardhan Hill mistook the hovering clouds for elephants. Using their powerful sharp claws, they ripped apart that cluster of elephant clouds. In fear, the clouds ran hither and thither. Seeing Krishna holding Giriraj aloft with his left hand, Mount Kailas shivered in fright while thinking, "Hey, look! Who is covering the sky? How could this happen?" Mount Sumeru panicked. Overwhelmed by fear, the elephants of the directions jumped in the Manasi Ganga. Giriraj served Gokul as a jewel-bedecked umbrella that could not be moved by the fierce winds or pierced by the razor-sharp lightning bolts of Indra. Balanced on the beautiful emerald pole of Krishna's raised arm, Giriraj cast a pleasing radiance upon everyone. The glimmering rain shower coming down on all sides seemed like streams of dripping pearls. While holding Giriraj in one hand, Krishna, whose wonderful behavior illuminates the world, spoke convincingly to the coward community. "Mago, O mother, do not be in anxiety. Father, do not worry. O friends, do not doubt my ability. Giriraj will not fall from my hand. You directly saw how he personally accepted our worship. Is it then difficult for him to remain suspended in the sky? Although Giriraj appears to be a huge, immovable mountain, he is transcendentally situated beyond the doubts and comprehension of this material world. Look how light he is. Even a child like me can easily pick him up. Oh, just see. Giriraj is completely independent and moving according to his own sweet will. In this matter, I am but an instrument. Therefore, you should collect all your property and come under the mountain. There is no difference between the village of Vrindavan and this valley below Giriraj. Be happy and stay here peacefully. At the end of the kalpa, everyone in creation gives up their gross bodies and lives within the abdomen of Narayan in their subtle bodies. Staying there, however, you could not enjoy as much fun as you can by living here within the belly of Giriraj. When I lifted the hill, huge chunks of earth fell off the bottom and formed a natural boundary wall around the perimeter of Giriraj. This wall will keep out the torrential rains. Forget about your pleasure gardens and your attachments to your former residences. Let this place become the source of joyful pastimes for the cows, gopas, and gopis. The string of Govardhanadari's reassuring words resembled an elegant necklace made from the nectar of his voice. Immediately, the elderly gopas felt completely pacified by Krishna's sweet words. Taking their wealth, sons, wives, cows, and priests, who felt immeasurable happiness and beamed with matchless beauty, they entered the splendid valley beneath Giri Govardhan. Taking shelter there, they all filled with surprise and smiled with delight. They clearly saw that the valley beneath Govardhan, which dazzled attractively in the light, could easily accommodate all their innumerable cows, animals, and family members. The valley brimmed with gratifying sense objects to see, touch, taste, and so on. That divine place was the very ornament of the earth. Its purity and opulence exceeded the wealth of the subterranean heavenly planets like Sutil. Fields of rich green barley spread in all directions, and many lakes full of crystal clear water stood here and there. The cows stayed near the border of the improvised town and pastured on fields full of fresh green grass. The Brajabasis stood around peacefully in different groups. Some coward men mixed with the Brahmanas, and the elderly married ladies stayed with their daughters. Radhika and other prominent young married gopis gathered besides them. Krishna's intimate friends like Bhattu remained by his side, and Nanda, Yashoda, and Balaram stood slightly in front of him. Thus, the venerable Vrajavasis relished great joy associating intimately with Krishna. They no longer felt any fear or discomfort from Indra's deluge, which threatened to destroy the whole world. The rain falling from the roaring clouds sounded like water pouring from the mouths of many large water pots. Although situated in different directions, all the Brajavasis gazed to their heart's content at the gorgeous lotus face of Giridhari, the lifter of Govardhan Hill. Each devotee saw that Krishna was looking directly at him. Feeling relieved, the illustrious Brahmanas offered abundant blessings to the blissful younger brother of Balaram. Krishna descended on earth to perform his transcendental pastimes and to crush the pride of the demons and the demigods. While holding up Govardhan Hill, Krishna was surrounded by all his loving associates. Taking advantage of the intimate setting, they gazed at Krishna with joyful faces, prayed for his victory, or affectionately smelled his head. Being saturated with parental affection, Mother Rohini firmly embraced her son Balaram, who always gives immense pleasure to his parents. Both the submissive gopis and the contrary ones like Radhika smiled blissfully while looking at Krishna with love-laden glances. The gopis always play with Krishna and enjoy love sports in the forest of Vrindavan. While gazing upon him, they looked like thirsty chakori birds continually drinking the ambrosial radiance of his moon-like face. With unblinking eyes, they took Krishna within their hearts and lovingly embraced him. During the festival of lifting Govardhan Hill, everyone tasted the greatest ecstasy. To lighten the heart of his beloved friend Krishna, Bhattu said, "O dearmost friend of the whole world, please listen to my words. By my Brahman Tejas, that is spiritual potency, I will fill you with happiness. When I am here as your friend, why are you troubling yourself by lifting Giriraj? O lotus-eyed one, just order me, and I will hold up this great mountain on the tip of my golden stick. You must be exhausted from holding the hill. So now relax and take some rest while I hold the hill." Brajeshwari Yashoda then addressed her son, "Oh, my darling child, you always act impudently due to the force of your uncontrolled senses. For years we peacefully observed the Indra Yajna, but then you abruptly stopped it. Disregarding the demigods never brings auspiciousness. How can one find fortune if he shows enmity toward the demons or the demigods? In the presence of these two fears, how can we enjoy living here?" Although Krishna's body is inexhaustible and ever blissful, Yashoda thought that he had overworked himself. Considering that, she expressed her motherly affection by reaching up to lovingly touch his lotus hand that held the hill. While doing this, she said, "Oh, how can your hand, which is as pure and soft as fresh butter, bear the heavy weight of this mountain without any other help or support? Oh, no! Oh, Giriraj, please be compassionate and give me a boon. If you are actually some worshipable god, then do something to become soft and lightweight so that Krishna will not feel any distress. O Honorable One, all my son's actions are in accordance with the instructions of Shastras and saintly persons." Bhattu said, "Mother, do not speak like this. How can you say Krishna is in distress? Listen, what good has that angry Indra done for us? He brutally attacked us with his dense dark clouds and fierce lightning bolts. Now just appreciate the dazzling sweetness that Krishna has manifested in his pastime of lifting Giri Govardhan. Had Indra not become angry, then we would not have had the chance to relish this nectar through our eyes." Mother Yashoda replied to Bhattu, "O bold one, holding a heavy load over the head can never be a show of sweetness. Lifting the enormous weight of Giriraj will cause one to become distressed and disabled. Just see, the locks of curly hair on Krishna's forehead are wet from perspiration. His face is dried out and become pale like a lotus wilted by the snow. His hands and feet have a ruddy color. How can a mother's heart, oh Shiva, Shiva, tolerate seeing such hardship?" Krishna said, "Mother, there cannot be anything more fun than this. Why are you worried about me for nothing? Just see, the great mount of Govardhan is floating on his own in the open sky. I told you before that this body of mine is but an instrument of his will." Yashoda replied, "My dear son, that may be true, but how can you not be tired after standing here for so long and holding that mountain with your raised arm? O intelligent one, I will believe what you said if Govardhan gives up the joyful association of your lotus hand and then flies around the sky playing on his own." Bhattu said, "O Queen of Vrindavan, don't you know that this great mountain is sitting on the lotus hand of Krishna by the strength of my mantras and special powers? Therefore, my friend is not feeling any pain from holding Giriraj. This is natural because everyone is favorably disposed toward the Lord of their hearts." Yashoda said, "O impudent one, what kind of nonsense are you speaking? I am burning in anxiety over my son. His tendency is to act independently without caring for any good instructions. And now you come here, make jokes, and laugh about it?" Nanda Maharaj interjected, "Why are you scolding, Bhattu? In this world, a person who is expert in diplomacy will use very affectionate words to encourage one in such a trying situation." So understanding the need of the time, Bhattu spoke appropriately. Besides that, our dear son very much appreciates the words of Bhattu. Meanwhile, the rest of the Brajavasis stood around Giridhari admiring the sweetness of his gorgeous transcendental form. Due to their affection for Krishna, the sinless Brajavasis transgressed ordinary etiquette and talked loudly among themselves about his extraordinary beauty. One Brajavasi said, "Up to this time, we have never really appreciated how Krishna's elegant body is the very ornament of the entire earth. Look, look! As Krishna displays his attractive threefold bending form, his left side stretches up broad and straight without showing the three lines on his belly. His right heel is raised, and his left foot appears to be kissing the earth. His well-shaped left knee is slightly contracted, and his waist is gently curved. His garland and uttariya, that is thin chadar, are swinging to the left side. It is very pleasant to see his armpit as he effortlessly holds his strong left arm aloft. His right thumb is tucked into the effulgent red cloth wrapped around his handsome hips, which are enriched with the three beautiful lines of his belly. Just see how the beauty of Krishna's right side decorates the earth. In a merry mood, Krishna glances lovingly at us as his eyes roam here and there. The pollen from the dew-covered blue lotuses tucked over his ears reflects exquisitely on his shining cheeks. Even though he must be tired from lifting Giriraj, Krishna is delighting our minds with the nectar of his gentle smile. Today his beautiful face is more dazzling than anything. A second Brajabasi said, "Oh, look, look! It is a great mystery that since Krishna has not moved for a long time, his ankle bells, which crush all false pride, solve all problems, and deliver one from all dangers, have now become silent just like a dumb person. Although they are awake, those ankle bells seem just like a pair of swans sleeping in front of a blue lotus flower. Just see! The ankle bells are absorbed in silent meditation just like a self-realized soul." But when Krishna lifted Giriraj, their meditation broke and they moved slightly. The demigods praised that pleasant jingling sound and came to serve it. Seeing that, the ankle bells again fell silent, feeling apprehensive about their sudden movement. Someone else said, "Oh, look at Krishna! While holding Giriraj nonchalantly in one hand, he holds his pastime flute in his other hand. Pressing it gently to his lips, he plays soft, sweet tunes that fill us with exhilaration." Noticing this, Bhattu said with alarm, "Oh, my friend, do not be so daring. Do not play your flute. How will you protect your friends today if Giriraj becomes ecstatic from hearing the sweet melodies of your flute and falls off your hand? Your flute has the power to destroy everything. Simply hearing it, mountains melt into rivers and rivers into stone. Oh, look! It can do so many incredible things." The coward boy said, "Oh, Kusumasava, may this mountain maintain his patience and keep protecting us from the calamitous inundation. If Giriraj melts into a river, he himself will become the very source of our destruction. But that will not happen. A person with great patience may sometimes thrill with ecstasy, but he quickly recovers his composure. There is not the slightest fear that Giriraj may change his position. Just relish the honey nectar of Krishna's flute and give up your restlessness." Another person said, "Look, just see the foolishness of Indra. Even though he is supposed to be a well-wisher for all, he has shown anger to such an innocent person. Within his heart, he has enmity against Krishna. O lifter of Giriraj, Indra tries to destroy our dynasty with his lightning bolts, whereas Krishna always does well for the world. Indra merely guards the eastern direction, whereas Krishna protects all the directions. Why has Hari, a second name for Indra, become so shameless by assuming the same name as our Lord Hari?" Someone else said, "How astounding! Before us, we see the deliverer from the inundation, the clouds causing the inundation, difficult times due to the inundation, and the very ocean of inundation. Are we being bewildered by some illusion? Or has someone cast a magic spell over us? Although we are in such a dangerous condition, still, we have not been defeated." One person said, "Though we are in the middle of a terrible devastation, we are delighting in a conversation full of joking and laughter. While relishing these nectarian talks, we do not feel any anxiety or disturbance. One Brajavasi said, "O Radhika, your face is superbly beautiful. Do not make your eyebrows dance while Krishna is holding up Govardhan, for that will severely agitate his mind. Then his arm will start shaking violently and cause the mountain to immediately fall from his hand. Please do not cause such a perilous situation." Radhika joked with Shyamala Sakhi, a witty, sweet speaker expert in making people laugh. Glancing shyly from the corner of her eyes, Radharani said, "Hey, doe-eyed Shyame, do not infuse your ecstasy in my heart. Calm down and control your mind." One gopi said, "Krishna, who turned the king of mountains into a play ball, must have tremendous patience. His clever behavior is beyond compare." Another gopi replied, "Alas, alas, your words are drawing exactly the opposite conclusion to my intentions. So now listen to your praises. O enchanting one, I will accept that the holder of Giriraj has great patience if he can keep his patience after seeing the splendid beauty of your full breasts." A third Sakhi said, "Oh, Sakhi, stop joking. Krishna's greatness is his ability to satisfy everyone with his unique sweetness. He is especially pleasing when he teases wanton ladies like us." One Sakhi said, "Just see how Krishna holds up the mountain with his left hand while softly playing the flute with his right hand. He casts loving sidelong glances on everyone and shakes his head pleasantly while listening to his friends." Then one dear Sakhi told Radhika, "Listen carefully to my words. While all the Brajavasis relish the pastime of constantly looking at Krishna, he is absorbed in glancing at you alone. Just see how his body has erupted with ecstatic symptoms such as tears, trembling, and thrill bumps. But the other Brajavasis think that these transformations are due to his lifting Giriraj." One Sakhi said, "Yes, what you said is absolutely true. Please take this pearl necklace as a reward for your realization." While admiring the infinite loveliness of Radhika, Krishna, enveloped in bliss, trembled and perspired profusely. Observing these ecstatic changes, one gopi pointed to the coward men and told her girlfriend, "Hey, look, the gopas think that Giridhari is feeling tired. In a mood of compassion, they have raised their sticks above their heads to help him hold up the hill." Seeing the prominent coward men endeavoring to hold up Giriraj, Radhika, whose face outshines the moon, covered her head with her veil and looked shyly at the ground. Then, unseen by her sakis, Radhika beamed a sweet, gentle smile to bathe Krishna in a shower of nectar. While looking at the coward men, Bhatu said, "O residents of Vrindavan, do not be afraid. You are just scratching the body of Giriraj with your sticks. But do not think that you are holding up the hill. Krishna is not the least bit tired. Besides, he is the brother of Balaram, who is famous for his unlimited strength. The pure and potent body of Krishna emits a dazzling radiance. Only a sudden calamity could reduce that effulgence. O my friend Krishna, observing the trembling of your body, I can understand that the beautiful face of that famous Sakhi Radhika has put you into great distress. The Prince of Vrindavan is the abode of unfathomable attributes. His face is as fresh as a blue lotus flower bathed in the soft moonlight. When he smiles attractively, his beautiful teeth sparkle like a thousand rays of light. A radiant pearl necklace adorns his chest. Krishna reveals the ecstasy in his heart by gently moving his reddish lips." After listening to the playful words of Bhatu, Krishna responded sweetly to the delight of his intimate friends. He said, "The coward men have a very favorable attitude toward me. Therefore, I always fulfill their desires. Why are you laughing at them? The Brajavasis do not know the inconceivable power of my body, nor do they know that the famous Radhika is actually one of my matchless forms. Radha's body is non-different from mine, and she is my favorite lover. The Gopas' attempt to hold up Giriraj simply proclaims their parental love for me. Indeed, their action is quite befitting. What could be more pleasurable than this? Then Krishna spoke to the Gopas. O Gopas, you are famous for reposing all your love in me. So why do you behave like this? Even though the great Mahadev, the father of Ganesh, respects you, you are acting like common men. Give up this wearisome endeavor. Just look at me. You can plainly see that I am not the least bit tired. Just like a cow hankering to see her calf, Yashoda stepped forward and spoke affectionately to her son. Oh, beloved one, the day has moved along and you appear afflicted and lackluster from not eating. Your belly has caved in and your jeweled belt has slipped off. Seeing that your lotus face has withered from fasting, the cows refuse to eat anything or move an inch from here, even though nearby there are fields rich with grains. Therefore, I appeal to you because you are very compassionate. Please stop playing artistically on your flute and drop your arm so that I can feed you with my hand. One whose actions are exemplary will adjust his behavior according to the conditions. I have brought you some warm, soft cakes and tasty, creamy yogurt with thick skin on top. Now take these delicious items along with Rama and your friends. Batu said, Oh, my dear friend, your mother spoke correctly. You should never go against her. Moreover, I am also upset by hunger. Krishna, the crest jewel of relishers, said, Oh, mother, I do not feel like a single moment has passed. Yet why do others think this short time to be so long? But since one should not disobey his superiors, I think it is proper for me to gladly eat from your hand.